the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to a Thursday afternoon, coming to you from Irma Central. I'm Nicole Sandler. Yeah, you know, once a story is out of the headlines of the news, people forget. But living down here in South Florida, it's really amazing how devastating this storm was and just how random all of the damage was. You know, we got relatively lucky where I live. My neighborhood, aside from quite a few downed trees and some screens ripped out and things like that, we made out okay. We have power here, which is unusual because a lot of people are still without power down here. The president today flew into Fort Myers. He's visiting Fort Myers and Naples, where they got the first hit after Irma crossed through the Keys. Naples was the first landfall of Irma, and they got hit really hard. I understand the president was handing out food. And what from what I read, he actually paid for the food that they were giving out today. So if that's true, good for him. I say if that's true because so much of what we hear from him is not true. Back to that in a moment. I've had a few people ask me about others who live down here. I don't know how Randy Rhodes is doing. Someone said she's still without power. I think she's still off the air, still running best of shows. She lives a little bit to the north of me. I'm in a town called Coral Springs. She's up in the West Palm Beach area. And her studio is in Delray Beach, which is also to the north of me. I don't know if they have power there or, you know, what the story is. But there are so many pockets of homes and businesses that are without power. People have asked about Boca Brittany Summers. She, I think, has power, but she lives in a condo, and her condo got hit pretty hard to the point where she's going to have to, the room that her studio is in, there were cracks in the wall. And she said when the wind was gusting, the rain was coming in really heavy, I mean, through the wall of the condo. So she's got some real damage there. They're going to, and hopefully the condo will take care of it. I don't know. She's nevertheless in for a few rough months. So let me put this out there right now. If anyone wants to help out Brit, her website is The Brittany Summers Show. It's The Brit Summers Show. Sorry. The Brit Summers, Somers Show. com. And she's got a donate button there. I'm sure she could use a little help if anyone is feeling generous today. The Keys are a mess. Now I understand the bridge down to the Keys is almost all the way open, and it's about getting supplies in now. So, help however you can, I suppose. I don't know what the president going to Fort Myers and Naples does other than puts him out there. I saw some of his, when he was leaving the White House and then before he got on Air Force One and then after he got off the Air Force One and when he arrived in Naples, I saw some of probably most of those little, press gaggles that he did. Anytime he was asked about Florida, which wasn't very often, most of the questions were about DACA, and we'll get to that. all he could do was congratulate himself and FEMA and the Coast Guard and the first responders. And look, they deserve thanks, but congratulations, not so much. I heard from somebody, who was it, who said they're in a pretty hard hit area, and yet they hadn't seen anybody. Maybe it was on the news. I saw this because I've been watching a lot of the news lately. You know, there's a lot of territory to cover, and between Texas and Louisiana and Florida and the Virgin Islands, the Virgin Islands got hit really hard. And remember, there are the British Virgin Islands, but there are the U.S. Virgin Islands, too. And those are U.S. territories. Puerto Rico, even though they didn't get hit as hard as was projected, they got hit pretty hard. Puerto Rico, we're looking at another shock doctrine going on there, because Puerto Rico was already having financial problems, and with the U.S. sort of just forgetting about them. I saw, God, and again, it was on, I think it was on MSNBC. Somebody actually talked about being in Puerto Rico and coming back to the United States. Puerto Rico is part of the United States, and it's, I feel like those people in the territories, in the U.S. Virgin Islands, in Puerto Rico, are the real forgotten souls, and they got hit the hardest. So, a lot of work still to be done. And just because it's not right there on the news doesn't mean that all is well. So, yeah, just something to keep in mind. Today on the show, it's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here, and we've brought back the Talk Media News Service. So in a few minutes, we'll hear from Victoria Jones as well. Richard Branson owns an island in the Virgin Islands, and apparently he was hunkered down. There's that phrase again, hunkered down there. But his island sustained great damage, as did everything in the Virgin Islands. Anyway, I mentioned the president not telling the truth. Last night, he had Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer over to the White House for Chinese food. There were a bunch of others from the administration there, too. But Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell were not invited. One of the things they talked about was DACA. And if you heard what Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer said after the dinner, it looked like they came pretty close to a deal. In fact, this morning, Chuck Schumer, speaking before the Senate, actually said this.
Last night, Leader Pelosi and I had a constructive meeting with President Trump and several members of his cabinet. One of our most productive discussions was about the DACA program, in which we all agreed on a framework to pass DACA protections and additional border security measures, excluding the wall. We agreed that the president would support enshrining the DACA protections into law. In fact, something he stated for a while needed to be done. And the president would also encourage the House and Senate to act. What remains to be negotiated are the details of border security, with a mutual goal of finalizing all the details as soon as possible. While both sides agreed that the wall would not be any part of this agreement, the president made clear he intends to pursue it at a later time, and we made clear that we would continue to oppose it.
So that's what he said, and then this morning, you know, the right wing freaked out. Twitter went berserk. Fox News went crazy. And yet everything that Trump tweeted out was basically that. They didn't come to a deal. But they had discussions, and the wall was not part of the discussions. You know what? We get into it in What's News, and we'll get into it with Victoria Jones. So let's do What's News now, and Victoria Jones back with us in a moment.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
House and Senate Democratic leaders Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer say they and the president have agreed to pass legislation to protect the nation's 800,000 dreamers from deportation.
White House Director of Legislative Affairs Mark Short told the Wall Street Journal that the Democrats' statement was, quote, misleading in a lot of ways. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders tweeted, while DACA and border security were both discussed, excluding the wall certainly was not agreed to. To which Schumer spokesman Matt House replied, the president made clear he would continue pushing the wall, just not part of this agreement.
After dinner at the White House on Wednesday night, Chuck and Nancy, as Trump calls them, released a joint statement. Quote, "We had a very productive meeting at the White House with the president. The discussion focused on DACA. We agreed to enshrine the protections of DACA into law quickly and to work out a package of border security, excluding the wall, that's acceptable to both sides."
The president, with what appeared to be at first as an agreement to agree on DACA, and then this morning, just a flurry of tweets, both clarifying and also a bit of stream of consciousness on the president's thinking on the issue. Among them, he writes this morning, "There was no deal made last night on DACA. Massive security would have to be agreed to." He also seeks to allay concerns that he's giving up on his controversial border wall on the southern border. He writes, "The wall, which is already on construction in the form of renovation, will continue to be built." And then he talks about the dreamers. Does anybody really want to throw out good, educated, and accomplished young people who have jobs, some serving in the military? He goes on, "They have been in our country for many years through no fault of their own, brought in by their parents at a young age."
Schumer and Pelosi on Thursday morning saying that Trump's tweets are not at odds with what they agreed to on Wednesday night. ABC News is reporting Thursday morning that Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin tried to get a government jet for his recent honeymoon.
Newly married this past summer, multimillionaire Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin formally requested that he and his new wife Louise, regularly seen in designer clothes with purses at $10,000 plus, be allowed to travel in style in a government jet on their honeymoon to Europe. At an estimated cost of $25,000 an hour, the price for taxpayers would have been several hundred thousand dollars.
They can't be expecting taxpayers to foot the bill for a Hollywood lifestyle.
But Mnuchin's honeymoon request was withdrawn after officials reportedly raised the issue of how it would look for a man worth more than $300 million to take a personal trip at taxpayer expense. In a statement to ABC News, a Treasury spokesperson said it was all about the need for secure communications and that alternatives were made available. So the happy couple had to travel at their own expense. But just a few weeks later, Mnuchin and his wife Louise did get a government jet to go to Kentucky for an official trip where, among other things, they viewed the solar eclipse.
The inspector general takes a look at the circumstances now surrounding all of the secretary's travel by government aircraft.
Bernie Sanders unveiled his Medicare for All plan at a press conference on Capitol Hill on Wednesday.
"Today, we say the function of a rational health care system is to provide quality care to all in a cost-effective way, and not to continue a system which allows insurance companies and drug companies to make hundreds of billions of dollars in profits each year, and to make healthcare industry CEOs extremely wealthy. The strengths of a Medicare for All program are not only its universality and its cost effectiveness. It also ends the complexity of a system which adds enormous stress at a time when people need it the least. While depending on your income, your taxes may go up to pay for this publicly funded program, that expense will be more than offset by the money you are saving by the elimination of private insurance costs. And today, we tell the drug companies that the American people are sick and tired of the greed of the pharmaceutical industry. We are no longer going to get ripped off and pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs on the Medicare for All. We're going to negotiate lower drug prices for the government and for every single American."
Earlier in the day, Lindsey Graham, Bill Cassidy, Dean Heller, and Ron Johnson introduced their last chance plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act before the window to do so closes on September 30th.
"If you believe repealing and replacing Obamacare is a good idea, this is your best and only chance to make it happen.
Pharma bro Martin Shkreli is in jail after taking to Facebook to offer his followers $5,000 to grab a strand of Hillary Clinton's hair during her book tour. He had been free on bond awaiting sentencing on a securities fraud conviction. Shkreli apologized for what he called satire, but a judge called the post a solicitation for assault and rescinded his bail. He was immediately taken into custody and will remain incarcerated until his sentencing this fall. I got good news. And that's a bit of What's News for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. What's News and the Nicole Sandler Show are 100% listener supported. So if you appreciate our work, hopefully you'll consider a contribution. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right. So there's What's News for you. Now we get to welcome back an old friend to the show, not an old voice, but a voice we haven't heard from in a little while. Hello, Victoria Jones.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm dry, and we actually have power here, so that's good.
That is very good. Now, did you lose power at all?
You know, for about a fraction of a second, it went out. This was like the day on Monday afternoon, which after the last big storm, my husband has lived in this house for a long time, and after the last big storm, they made it through the storm okay, and then the next day, after it was clearing out, they lost power, and it was out for 2.5 weeks. So what happened is on Monday, we thought we made it through free and clear, and all of a sudden the power, we had a, you know, one of those short outages. It went out, and we both went, oh no! And by the time the no was finished, it came back on. So we got very, very, very lucky. You know, going out around town, just in our little city of Coral Springs, there are still a lot of homes without power, a lot of businesses still without power.
That's amazing. So what percentage do you reckon of your town is out?
You know, I couldn't say accurately, but boy, a lot of down trees. And it's, you know, we had tornadoes on I guess it was Sunday night. Tornadoes were spinning off like at the ocean, and then they were cutting across. We have an east-west, you know, highway 595 that goes basically from the ocean to the Everglades, and they were pretty much following the route straight down. And for about 2.5 hours on Sunday night, it was a nonstop alert where we don't get tornadoes in Florida, or we used to not get tornadoes in Florida, but they were spinning off the hurricane. And I think, you know, driving around town, it almost seemed like we could see where the tornadoes touched down because they took down big oak trees.
That's extraordinary.
Yes, it really is.
Oaks are so, you know, the majestic oak.
Yep. Well, they're, you know, where they totally bent over and the roots are sticking up. There were some palm trees, you know, and palm trees are meant to weather this stuff, so to speak. And the trunks were just snapped in half.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And it's so random.
Are you on the East Coast or the West Coast?
I'm on the East Coast of Florida, but we're about as far west as you can go before you hit the Everglades. So we're in northwest Broward County, just west of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So you were east of it, but as close to it as you could be while still being east of it, sort of thing.
Yeah, pretty much. But we got really lucky with it going over, you know, bearing down on the West Coast instead of the East Coast. We spent days. This is why I wasn't on the air last week, because each day we were going to get up and we were going to go to Orlando. Then we were going to go to, and then it started moving to the west. So then we were going to go to Fort Myers. Then we was like, oh, no, okay, well, we'll go to Tampa. And then it's like, oh, no, we're just going to stay put. And that was the smartest thing to do, it turns out. We know people who did evacuate to the west coast of Florida who had to turn around and come back. But, you know,
Oh, of course. But weren't the roads so clogged that couldn't get through?
Yeah, that was the problem. And that was what ultimately one of the main reasons we didn't go is because I was so afraid of being stuck on the road and running out of gas and being, you know, out in the elements when the storm hit. So, a lot of anxiety over the last week or so.
I can imagine. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, I got anxious. I mean, this is mini anxiety. I got anxious when I first started following it at the very beginning, and it looked like it was coming from Maryland.
Uh-huh.
So on the Tuesday, I went out and bought more storm lanterns, and bought snacks. So before anybody was buying, I thought, I'm getting more storm lanterns because I live in a basement and I at the bottom of a slope and I live next to a lake. And I thought, okay, here we go. You know, this is the end. And so I was very anxious until it moved.
Right. And it keeps moving, and that's the thing. You never know. They keep moving. There's no way to, they can't accurately predict this is exactly where it's going to go.
It's just scary. I mean, I'm watching this silly Jose who's doing a little twisty dance out there.
Yep.
You know, if you look at that funny twisty dance he's doing, it's like, you know, I don't trust you. Any hurricane that's doing this loop-de-loop thing, I don't trust you not to do another little loop out there.
That's right.
Decide you're coming straight back to New York. I don't trust that Jose
right.
at all.
Well, the good news is it stayed as a Category 1, but a Category 1 hurricane is still pretty strong. It's amazing we just went through, a Cat 4. So, but a 1 is nothing to, poo-poo either.
No, none of them are. I mean, once the word hurricane starts being bandied about, it's like we're not talking about a breeze now.
Well, not only that, even when it's a tropical storm, once it left Florida, Irma was a tropical storm. But look at all the damage it caused in Georgia and South Carolina. Charleston is flooded. That's from tropical storm.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they evacuated Savannah completely.
Wow. That's funny because I had a listener, I believe, in Savannah. I had a number of very generous, wonderful listeners who emailed me offering, shelter in their homes. Everywhere from, I believe Savannah, Georgia, up to New York to Chicago. I don't know how we were going to get to any of those places. By the time we started looking for flights out, everything was booked. Everything.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. I think one of the things that is extraordinary, I know the number of deaths is creeping up, particularly with the terrible nursing home. But I do think what is extraordinary is that really this was actually very well coordinated.
In terms of the relief?
No, not in terms of the relief so much, but in terms of the movement of people, even though the roads were jammed. Roads are obviously going to be jammed. But if they hadn't sort of said, get out
now,
to people, and ensured that people did, it would have been so much worse. I think they were very prudent is the only word
I
can use.
But you had to leave early. My neighbors across the street left on Tuesday, and we realized by Wednesday it's almost too late. Even though we thought about going Thursday, we thought about going Friday. We were still getting the house all ready because there's a lot of stuff you need to take everything in, take everything down, do everything you can to minimize the damage. But we were still considering going as late as Friday morning. And then my fear of not being able to get gas and being stuck out on the road really scared me.
Terrifying. That would be just terrifying. Because then you're like, okay, so now I'm a sitting duck. I'm just
Exactly.
No.
So, but speaking of that,
I'm pleased.
That nursing home, that's not far from here. I grew up in Hollywood, Florida. I know that hospital that was right across the street from that nursing home very well, where they very easily could have moved those people. And instead, today there are 8 people dead, and there are a number more still in critical condition because they're saying just the air conditioner was out, that they still had power, but a transformer went out that dealt with the air conditioner. It just doesn't sound right.
It doesn't sound, there's a lot about it that doesn't sound right. I read the Sun Sentinel, which has done great local coverage. So impressed with that paper. I read the New York Times. I read AP. They all had slightly different angles, slightly different quotes, but piecing it all together, and it was very complex. There was a circular firing squad going on of people blaming each other, of the power company and the people who ran the home and the county and all these. And it was like, well, I don't know. I'm not an investigator, but somebody's not telling the truth.
Right.
Somebody's not telling the truth because something didn't happen that was supposed to happen here. Something fell through the cracks because the air conditioner doesn't go out and you die 5 minutes later. That doesn't happen.
Right.
It doesn't get that hot that quick.
Yeah, well, who knows how long the air conditioning was out. And it does get hot. And I don't know how old the building was. You know, there's a lot we don't know. And we don't know when they started dying either.
No, but apparently it was sweltering. And it had gone out I think it had been out for about a day, well, for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And they had called Broward County, the particular department they had to call, to report that it had gone out. And Broward County, according to Broward County, said, do you have any emergency needs or medical needs? And they said, no, we don't.
Wow. Well, there you go. You know, and this particular nursing home had a lot of, doesn't have a great record, let's put it that way.
Right, exactly. And that, I think, is another piece to this that will come out. And I'm glad that they're doing a criminal investigation.
Yes.
I mean, it may turn out that there wasn't anything criminal, it was just stupidity. But I think you have to start by doing a criminal investigation. I mean, you know, I don't like to go there, but I think you just have to start and say, look, we're taking it very seriously. This is how we're going to start looking at it. Maybe it will downgrade, but... you know, we're starting at a Category 5. Maybe it'll end up as a tropical storm.
Right, maybe. Oh, what else is going on?
Well, there's various things going on, I'm not going to go with like the biggie. I'm
okay.
Going to tell you that three former female Google employees have accused the internet search company of gender discrimination.
Uh-oh.
In a class action lawsuit filed today.
Really?
Yeah. According to the complaint, they say that women in Google's ranks face systemic discrimination when it comes to wages and promotions.
It sounds like, I mean, everything in Silicon Valley seems to be kind of sexist, doesn't it?
It does a bit. And now, Google, they go into some details. It was filed in San Francisco Superior Court. They list a whole load of stuff. Now, Google denies there's a pay gap between male and female employees, but it's the subject of a complaint filed against the internet giant by the Department of Labor also.
Wow. All right.
So we'll see where that goes. So that's kind of interesting. Meanwhile, the University of California, Berkeley, California, is rolling out major security preparations and offering counseling services to students and staff ahead of conservative commentator Ben Shapiro's, I think it's Shapiro, not Shapiro, speech at the school today.
Wow.
Saying that they're deeply concerned about the impact some speakers may have on individuals' sense of safety and belonging. No one should be made to feel threatened or harassed simply because of who they are or what they believe. For that reason, the following support services are being offered and encouraged, the university said in the memo.
Because somebody's speaking on campus?
Yeah, because Ben Shapiro is
wow.
is speaking on campus today.
Wow. That's a bit much, I think. But, you know, maybe that's just me. I'm older.
No. No. Yeah, well, I think I'm older, too. I think I'm getting a bit old. Yeah.
You know, I remember the days of free speech. You know, you come, you talk, you do your thing. And if you don't want to hear that person speak, you don't go hear them speak.
That's what I was thinking. Why not go and watch a TV show online?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Go to a concert.
Watch an episode of Friends or something. Or, you know,
just, we're old.
No, they do that. No, I'm on BuzzFeed. I know what they watch. They're watching Friends.
Are they?
They're watching Friends. Yeah, I do all the BuzzFeed quizzes. They're all up on what goes on Friends.
Well, that's good to know. All right. Then I don't feel so out of it.
Yeah. They know Friends.
All
they
right.
know Friends. Or what the season finale of Game of Thrones again. It's worth a second view.
You know, speaking of Game of Thrones, real quick, and then I'll let you go. We watched this Girl on the Lake thing that was on China Girl. I don't know if you saw it. It was on the Sundance Channel. And Brienne, the big strapping,
yeah.
she's one of the stars of it, along with, what's
no.
her? Yes. Yes. It's worth watching. She has a great
that.
Character.
I heard it was a great series.
It's weird. It's a little strange, but
yeah.
It was very it's very good. But yeah, that was a nice surprise for me that Brienne is on it. She plays a girl named Miranda.
All I can say is, and I know it won't happen because nothing good happens in Game of Thrones, is I want her to marry the red-headed king, and I want them to have lots of children. I just want that to happen.
All right. Well, we've got a while to go before we get to that point. So, Victoria Jones.
And she won't even give him a friendly look. So, you know.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I know Game of Thrones not that well. All right. Victoria Jones from the Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. It's wonderful to hear from you again. We'll talk to you next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you
Me
so
too.
Much.
Me too. Thank
Thanks.
You. Bye-bye. All right. We'll take a break. Come back on the other side with Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny and the Blue America Pack next.
There's a giant hole in Donnie Trump's proposal to build a $21 billion wall on our Mexican border. I'll tell you what Trump won't tell you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. How much of your money does Donald Trump want to pour into his xenophobic fantasy of erecting an impenetrable wall on our Mexican border? The big businessman turned president insists he doesn't care about costs, just build it. That seems to be a very unbusinesslike approach, but then it's not his money, is it? For those of you who do care, one measure of what the total tab might be is that he's now demanding $1.6 billion from Congress to start construction. How much wall will that buy? 74 miles. Now, how long is that U.S.-Mexican border he wants to seal off? 1,900 miles long. So $1.6 billion down and only 1,826 miles to go. And let's not even get into the cost overruns, fraudulent billing, shoddy materials, and other scams that the army of corporate contractors will add to the sticker price of Donald's boondoggle on the border. All of this for a divider of both physical and symbolic ugliness that only an extremist minority of Americans support. Besides being wildly expensive, this Trumpian folly is not needed, won't work, stifles the border economy, tramples on property rights, destroys sensitive environments, autocratically separates millions of families and communities, and is an insult not only to the people of Mexico, but also to our own people's democratic values. This is Jim Hightower saying, as for the assertion by diehard Trumpeteers that a massive 30-foot-high, 6-foot-deep, steel and concrete barricade will stop illegal immigration from Mexico, here is a fact Congress should ponder before taxing us with this harebrained structure. 2/3 of undocumented migrants in our country entered with legal temporary visas, then just stayed after their visas expired. How does Trump's gold-plated wall stop people who will simply walk through it or fly over it?
If you like these feisty pops of populism that Hightower zings out on the airwaves, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter provides the in-depth lowdown on what the greed heads of Wall Street and the boneheads of Washington are doing to us behind the scenes. With Hightower's saucy Texas humor and truth-telling populist perspective, the lowdown literally can lift you up. And get this. You can have the lowdown delivered to your mailbox or email each month for only $15 a year. Yes, 12 issues, only 15 bucks. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. He joins us each Thursday to talk politics and more. Hey, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole.
How are you doing today?
Pretty good.
Good.
Good day, haven't I?
Good.
And you?
Well, you know, still digging out from behind the hurricane. It was quite treacherous down here for a few days.
I read.
Yeah, we got lucky. I keep, you know, knocking on wood laminate here. We got very lucky. We have power. We have water. My sister, who lives a couple of towns over, they have power but no water. My other sister, who lives up in Ocala, she lost her power. I think she's still without power. There are downed trees everywhere. It was a scary night. Scary 24, 48 hours.
Wow, and Ocala is not even anywhere near the coast. Isn't that up near Orlando?
It is. It's north of Orlando, about an hour or so north of Orlando, right in the middle of the state. This storm was so big, it covered the entire state. That's why when we were thinking of leaving, there was really nowhere to go. Because anywhere you went, you were still within, I mean, the storm covered the entirety of the state. And Florida's a pretty big state.
And from what I read or heard on TV, also the neighboring states like Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah, what they got, Georgia and South Carolina got, you know, they only had a tropical storm, but Charleston, South Carolina is completely underwater. I guess Savannah, Georgia was evacuated. I mean, this thing just went straight up like the middle. Well, it went up the west coast of the state, then it veered more to the middle and just kept going north. So this was a heavy-duty storm. Now what's really scary is if you look out on the satellite, there are two more little depressions forming right around where Irma formed. So the hurricane season runs through the end of November. So, yeah.
I mean, I was somewhere that some right-wing crackpot was blaming it on the gays.
Well, you know, of course, probably voted for Trump.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the thing is, what do the gays have to do with, like, Charleston, Carolina, South Carolina being inundated with water?
Well, nothing. Nothing, you know, the whole thing saying that it's because of the gays makes about as much sense as, you know.
Everything else they say?
Exactly. So why should that have anything to do with anything, right? There's no correlation there. So Howie Klein at DownWithTyranny.com, you have a great piece that about our old friend Frank Schaefer. Frank Schaefer has been on this program a number of times over the years. His father was like the Pope.
Speaking of crackpot religious right lunatics.
That was his father, Francis Schaefer. He was like the Pope of the evangelical movement.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that he was right up there with people like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. That was his circle. I mean, when Frank was a young kid, he was in the White House dining with Ford and then Reagan and then George H.W. Bush. I mean, this was the royalty of the religious crackpot right.
Right, and I didn't realize you'd been at Down with Tyranny. You've been covering his work for a long time. I don't know how I somehow missed that, but both of us have been, I guess, fans of Frank Schaefer's for a long time, and you have this piece up about something really cool that he's doing that you're working with him on.
Yeah, well, actually, I posted it this morning. It's mostly written by him, but I'll tell you the whole story.
Okay.
I feel like sometimes, like when I talk to you about this stuff, that I'm just talking to you, and I don't even realize in my head that I'm talking to like a whole listening audience. And I realize afterwards that I've just betrayed like a trust by talking about this publicly. But I'll do it anyway.
Okay.
So in any case, I don't know if it was Nancy Pelosi herself who invited him. I didn't ask him, but he was invited to a pretty top level Democratic strategy session up in Northern California recently that I believe was hosted by Nancy, and there were a lot of establishment Democratic leaders there, and Frank was there too. And I was thinking it's odd that someone who is as thoughtful and sort of smart about Democratic politics would be with that group of people. But whatever. So he was there, and Nancy was pretty much, or whoever, I shouldn't blame her alone, but let me skip ahead a little bit.
Okay.
So the way I knew about this was a friend of mine sent me a video of him on the literally on the floor, laying on the floor of the Oakland airport and making one of his video blogs, which he does these blogs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about what happened at the meeting. that he had just come back from. He was coming back. He lives near Boston, and he was flying back from the Oakland airport to Boston from this meeting in Northern California with Nancy and the other Democratic leaders. And he's talking about it, and he's going to try to help to elect good, solid, progressive Democrats against some of these right-wing lunatics. He's, you know, he grew up with these right-wing lunatics, and he certainly knows who they are and how dangerous they are, and he wants to get them out of Congress and help the Democrats take back Congress. But what I realized when he was talking, even though he didn't use the names, I could tell from the descriptions that they had sold him a bill of goods about some really conservative, even very right-wing Democrats.
Uh-oh.
Who they were passing off as progressives. Now, if you don't follow, you know, the day-to-day votes in Congress, and you just see that someone has a D next to their name, and then you've got someone like Nancy Pelosi lying to your face and saying to you, oh, yes, she's a great progressive. We have to save her. But you don't realize she's talking about Stephanie Murphy, who for all intents and purposes is a Republican. She has a D next to her name, but she votes with the Republicans. Again, I've said this before on this program, when Paul Ryan and Kevin McCarthy are bragging how this horrible bill that's so detrimental to America and so hideous to progressives, when they pass this bill and they say it's bipartisan, we passed it with bipartisan support, they're talking about a tiny handful of so-called Democrats, right, like Stephanie Murphy, who vote with the Republicans. And he's laying there on the floor of the Oakland, Frank is laying there on the floor of the Oakland airport talking about how he's got to save Stephanie Murphy. Uh-huh. And I thought, oh my God, no, please, Frank, no, it's the wrong direction. There are plenty of great progressives running, and that's where you should put your energy. But I don't know him. I've covered him since, I think I started writing about him in 2006 or 7. And I respect him and like him,
mm-hmm.
But I've never met him.
Oh.
But I knew we had a mutual friend, and I asked her to introduce us, and she did. And then Frank and I, since then, have been talking on the phone and exchanging emails, and I've been introducing him to people. And I can't tell him, you know, who to support and who not to support, but I am introducing him to lots and lots of progressives. So far, he is loving them. He even, I'm embarrassed to say this, but he even, like, asked me if I was guardian angel.
Wow.
But just as an example, his new best friend, a friend of your show as well, Randy Bryce.
Awesome.
Those are exactly the kind of people,
right,
that he should be getting to know and working with. I know that he is, he's gotten his plane ticket for Milwaukee, and he's going to be in Racine next week. So he's definitely, I don't want to be giving away his whole shtick, but he's definitely going to be working with a lot of the really true, strong progressive candidates who are talking about helping working families get a fair break in America, which is just what he talks about as well. So it makes a lot more sense for him to be doing that than to, you know, be falling into this trap that the Democratic establishment tried setting for him. So I'm very excited about that. I did a post that goes into great detail about, you know, what's motivating him and what he's trying to accomplish and why he's trying to accomplish it. And, people are enjoying it. I mean, I sent it out to a whole bunch of Blue America candidates and some of the incumbents, and within minutes, I got back the most, excited people. You know, some of them want to, like, study it a little. They don't know who he is, or they want to figure it out. But instantaneously, Ro Khanna, who's a congressman from Silicon Valley, got back to me and said, oh, my God, this is right up my alley. I want to introduce me. And I did.
Great. So he's going to travel around the country and do video interviews with a lot of these candidates.
Exactly. He's going to be doing these short films with these candidates. You know, as you know, some of these candidates don't have the resources to even do videos. And that's going to be a big help for him. You know, basically, there's going to be, you know, it's not 100%, but basically, Democrats are going to vote for Democrats
right
in the midterm elections. Republicans are going to vote for Republicans. Hopefully some of the Republicans will stay home and not vote at all because they're so sickened by what's going on in their party. But it, just in general, Republicans vote for Republicans, Democrats vote for Democrats. And how does the election get decided? Independence.
Yeah.
That's who decides the, that's who's deciding the elections year after year, more than ever before. And Frank Schaefer is a guy who is really liked and really trusted and really taken very, very seriously by independents, especially independent millennials. And that's who he appeals to, and that's who pays attention to the things that he writes and the things that he has to say. He's had a number of best-selling books. For him to sit down and talk with people like Randy Bryce is very, very valuable because he's going to be talking to Randy for an audience that Randy wouldn't normally reach. I mean, remember, you know, Randy is a labor activist and a mm-hmm. veterans activist. And in those kinds of communities, you know, the Democratic Party, union households, veterans households, Randy's going to be fine. He's, you know, he's communicating with those people. He has a conversation going with them. But when it comes to independents, how do you reach those independents? If you're a Democratic candidate who's never held office and who's running, it's very, very, very rough to reach that audience. And that's why Frank Schaefer can be so helpful to some of these candidates. I mean, the second person after Ro Khanna to get in touch with me is a young woman that we have running. She's a school teacher, and she was a Bernie activist in North Carolina. Bernie won her county, largely due to her efforts and Bernie's platform. And she's running for Congress now. A woman named Jenny Marshall.
Okay.
And Jenny was just as excited as Ro Khanna was and as Randy Bryce was, and she knew very well what his work. She had read his books. She had seen his films. And boom, she said, please, please introduce me to Frank. And for all I know, they're on the phone talking with each other right now.
Oh, that's great. This is exciting. I'm looking forward to it. Frank's books are great, and his video blogs are very compelling. And so this is a new thing for him to go around and do interviews. But what a great use of his talents. And you know, he's a great speaker. Again, he's been on the show a few times over the years, and he's always fascinating.
You know, another person who was extremely excited about him, and you won't be surprised to hear this. Is someone who I don't know if you and she have connected yet. I know you knew each other, but a woman who's running for Congress in the Houston area, who like you and I were involved with the rock music business for a very long time, Dana Steele.
Right.
So Dana is running against a complete crackpot right wing psychopath named Bruce Babin. Who's just insane. I mean, he actually said something like, you know, to the effect of, sometimes you've got to tell some woman who talks too much to shut up.
Oh, my God.
Now he's got, you know, Houston's, you know, first lady of rock and roll who really knows how to talk as his opponent in Texas's very, very hard hit 36th congressional district. And she was one of the first people that I told that I told Frank about, because I knew that they would totally like sync up. Their ideas are very, very similar. Mm-hmm. Their approach is very similar, and I'm sure that Frank will wind up going to Houston on this trip as well, and hooking up with Dana. Now I know you and Dana, did you make
yes.
a did she you have her on your show? Did
she,
you have you talked to her?
Yes, in fact, she was on the show between our two hurricanes. So we had a nice little talk. She was helping prep me for Irma after she got through with Harvey. She sustained some damage there in Houston. They got hit, you know, in her district really, really hard.
They sure did. And she's, she told me, I think yesterday, that she had contractors at her house mm-hmm. trying to, do some real, you know, heavy duty repairs.
Yeah, the downstairs they had water, so they have to take down the sheetrock, otherwise you get mold. So yeah, she said, you know, they lived upstairs. She realized she had gone about a week without a shower. Not a fun thing. But she's raring to go. That'll be great.
Yes, I'm very, very excited about that. And, you know, it's great when, you know, sometimes you have to talk to people and you have to tell them, you know, who, you know, you have this idea like, hey, you know, I want to put you together with Frank Schaefer. And then they say, well, who's that? And, you know, and they don't know anything about it. They've never read his books. They've never seen his videos. They haven't seen his blog. So you have to start from the beginning and tell them. But then you get to someone like Dana, who knows? You know, you don't have to tell her a thing. She, oh my God! You know, she knew immediately. She knew who he was. She knew what it meant, and she got it. And you know, again, you know that's going to be a natural fit.
That's wonderful. So this is exciting. So do we know when this is all starting, or he's already in the prep phase now?
I think the first thing the first one he's doing is next week. I believe it's the first one when he's going to go to Racine, Wisconsin, and sit down with Randy Bryce. I believe that's the first one. I know nearby where he lives. I mean, like I said, he lives just north of Boston, and he's very excited to meet what's his name again? Jared Golden, who is the candidate who's running in Maine's second congressional district.
Right.
So Maine has two congressional districts. One of them is mostly Portland and Augusta and the coast, the south coast of Maine. And that's a really kind of, you know, kind of a hip area and a very, very progressive, extremely liberal. It's really, when you think of all the great things about Maine, that's really what you're thinking about is that first district, and that was politically, and that was a district that went, you know, very, very heavily for Bernie, and then very, very heavily for Hillary in the general. And unfortunately, the second district was a different situation. Now, the second district also went very heavily for Bernie. That's a less prosperous part of Maine. It's rural. Those people are hurting economically, and they really bought into Bernie's Bernie's program and you know, went for him in a big way over Hillary in the primaries. And then what happened was you know, Bernie didn't get into the general. It was Hillary against Trump, and they looked at the two of them. They weren't crazy about Trump in that area, but they judged him to be the lesser of two evils, and the second district of Maine wound up going for Trump. So that's one of the, I think, two states in the country where it's not winner-take-all for the Electoral College. They actually split the vote. So Trump got one vote out of Maine's four. So three votes went for Hillary, and one vote, the one representing just that second congressional district, went to Trump. So anyway, there's a Republican in that district now named Bruce Poliquin, some, you know, just rubber stamp Republican, and Jared Golden, who is the leader of the state legislature. He's the whip, the Democratic whip, but he's also the cutting edge on policy. He's the guy that is writing the most progressive bills and pushing the most progressive. Now, there are other very strong progressives in that state as well, so it's not only him, but he's definitely one of them, and he's pushing for really good legislation and has been for some time. Before that, he was in the Army. He had active duty in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and I've gotten to know him over the last few months, and Blue America was one of the organizations that was urging him to run. And he was kind of reluctant because he likes what he's doing in the state legislature. And he wasn't sure. And then all of a sudden one day he called me, he said, you know what, I'm going to do it. And he said he's making his announcement on such and such a day. And we endorsed him on that day.
Oh, that's great.
And anyway, so what I was getting to is he's near enough to where Frank lives, that Frank will soon be doing one of these video interviews with him as well.
Well, I'll be sure to post a link to the piece that's a Down with Tyranny. It's called The Difference Between an Ex-Republican and an Ex-Republican and Winning Back the
that's
House
right.
in 2018.
That's right. On a tangent there, right? Right in the headline. Because I often talk about ex-Republican, you know, ex with quotation marks around them, like Charlie Crist
right.
is an ex-Republican. He was the governor of your state. He's a Republican. He's you know, yes, he's an ex-Republican because they threw him out of the party, basically. And for opportunistic reasons, he became an independent,
right.
and he realized he's not getting elected to anything, is that. So he then decided he would join the so-called join the Democratic Party. But now he's in Congress. Guess who he's voting with?
With the Republicans.
Almost every critical vote, almost every one of them, he votes with the Republicans. That's because that's who he is. That's who he's always been. He's not a teenager. He's not going to change his stripes now. He is, you know, an ex-Republican with quotations about around the ex. However, every now and then you run into someone who's an ex-Republican who really is an ex-Republican.
Right.
And they don't need quotations around the ex. And the best example of that is Elizabeth Warren. I mean, she grew up in a Republican household. She was a Republican when she was a kid. But she realized pretty quickly, it wasn't, you know, in later life, and it wasn't when she was running for for any office, but way, way, way before that, she realized that she isn't really a Republican. She's a Democrat because she believes in the things that Democrats believe in. So, and now her record speaks for itself. You know, she's the best you can get when you talk about an ex-Republican. She's as good as you can get in any kind of situation. She's wonderful. And Frank is that kind of ex-Republican. He grew up as an ex-Republican. He came to the realization, not that he wants to run for office so he has to change his party, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
He realized that he believes in what the Democratic Party believes in, or at least the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt wing of the Democratic Party, or as Wellstone used to call it, the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party.
Right.
And so when he became an ex-Republican, he really became an ex-Republican and denounced what the Republican Party is stands for these days, not what it stood for when Abraham Lincoln was a Republican, but what it stands for in the Ronald Reagan and beyond Republican Party,
right.
this crackpot group of like racists and bigots and neo-Nazis and every kind of kook you could think of.
And
Trump.
Right. And, you know, Frank Schaefer still is not, I don't think he's a Democrat. I think he's an independent, but
he is.
Right.
He became a Democrat. He finally, he was an independent. And finally, they pushed the Republicans got so out of their minds that he eventually finally changed his voter registration. And he is now a Democrat. Even before that, he was voting for Democrats, but as an independent. Now he's an actual Democrat.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Well, this is exciting. I'll put a link to that story up on the blog. And another one that you wrote about what's happening in Virginia 10. We've only got like 3 minutes left, believe it or not.
That there's no conclusion to that yet. We don't know what's going to happen, but I'll just give you the very short thumbnail version of it. So the DCCC favorite candidate is this state senator. They want her to be the nominee. It's a very, very winnable district. But last time it was a very winnable district, too. And in fact, Hillary won the district by 10 points. But the Democrats nominated just a wretched candidate. It's just as bad as they come. And this new one is the same thing. It's like it could be they could take the head off one and put it on the other one because they're the same. And they want her to win. So there are I don't know, almost 10 Democrats or around 10 Democrats running, and three of them are beating her in the fundraising world. So usually the DCCC candidate is the one that gets all the money, but in this case, you have two progressive women who are bringing in more money than she is, and then there's a veteran who's running who's bringing in more money than she is. So the DCCC got all nervous and all freaked out. Their candidate isn't even going to win the primary. So what do they decide to do? Get rid of the primary. Who needs a primary?
Oh my God!
So what they're trying to float now, and which legally they can do, is the idea that instead of a primary, they'll have a convention, which is all stacked with establishment people, and then they'll select the DCCC candidate. If they do that, what will happen will be there will be no chance that the Democrats can beat Barbara Comstock, the Republican incumbent, because people will be so infuriated that Democratic activists won't even go vote if they're prevented from helping pick the nominee in a primary. But that's the DCCC. That's who Nancy Pelosi has become. That's what Ben Ray Lujan is. That's who Joe Crowley is. That's who Chuck Schumer is. That they just want to have their horrible, corrupt candidates in place, and whether they lose or they win, they don't care. They'd rather win, but they would rather lose than have a progressive or a reformer get in, because a progressive or a reformer of any kind is a threat to their own power.
Wow.
And that's what they're afraid of.
Well, that's why Blue America is so important, the work you do, Howie Klein. Again, I'll put up a link to that piece as well so people can read it, and a link to the Blue America PAC so we could see all the candidates that you've endorsed so far. And
we have a new one coming this weekend, one I'm very, very excited about, a guy named Dan Cannon in Indiana. It's the one seat in Indiana that the Democrats can possibly take back. Dan's an amazing candidate. He's an attorney who has argued in front of the Supreme Court successfully. I can't remember the name of the case. It's kind of a weird German-sounding name. Right. But it was the case that legalized gay marriage.
Oh, okay. Well,
I did that. Imagine that coming from Indiana.
That's
but
amazing.
This guy is whip-smart.
Right. Howie Klein, you know, we're out of time.
Support the Bernie. Sorry?
We're out of time.
Oh, sorry about that. Okay.
That's okay.
Well, we'll talk next week.
We'll talk next week. Thank you so much, Howie Klein of Blue America and DownWithTyranny.com. Thanks, Howie. And I'll see you tomorrow.
It's Thursday, September 14, 2017.
The urgent need for relief aid across this region is growing. Residents struggling to get by.
Desperate conditions in the Caribbean in the wake of Hurricane Irma. 8 dead in sweltering Florida nursing home as power in the state remains out for millions. New major gasoline spill and new lawsuits in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. Plus,
the impacts of climate change are no longer subtle. We are seeing them play out in real time.
Understanding the impact of a warming world on extreme weather events.
All of those extremes and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Even though everything that scientists said was going to happen, the right-wingers are still, no, we can't blame climate change. Yes, I agree. My theory is it has something to do with Hillary's emails.
I knew it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, this monster Hurricane Irma apparently has a very long tail, as there are a lot of people struggling in a lot of places to get by, even though we are now days later.
Yep, storm impacts last long after the floodwaters recede and the winds die down. As the dramatic images of Hurricane Irma are fading and the corporate news media is starting to move on, the victims are still grappling with the aftermath. In the U.S. Virgin Islands, relief aid has been slow to arrive and desperate conditions are creating a growing humanitarian concern. That's according to Virgin Islands Daily News reporter Suzanne Carlson in an interview with MSNBC.
There's a lot of people on islands that were already struggling before the hurricane even hit. They're finding themselves having to suddenly walk in search of food, water, gas. It is extraordinarily dire for a lot of people here, and there are many people suffering tremendously.
In the battered Florida Keys, where there is no electricity and little clean water, preliminary estimates from FEMA indicate one out of every four homes in the Keys was destroyed, and thousands will require long-term temporary housing assistance. And a very sad development out of Hollywood, Florida. Authorities confirmed that 8 elderly residents of a nursing home who made it through the storm itself died after several days of stiflingly hot and extremely humid conditions in their facility due to the loss of air conditioning.
Yeah, you say the media is already moving on. That's true. But I think the extent of this devastation is just beginning to come to light. This is going to take a very long time and is going to be very painful for a lot of folks.
In Houston, Hurricane Harvey's floodwaters triggered another major fuel spill. Nearly 500,000 gallons of gasoline spilled from storage tanks into waters along the Houston Ship Channel. It's just the newest of more than 24 spills that the Associated Press has documented from fuel and chemical tanks caused by Harvey in the heavily industrialized area.
Well, I'm glad that AP is documenting them, because Trump's EPA certainly does not seem to be doing so.
And testing conducted by the New York Times confirms that floodwaters in at least 2 Houston neighborhoods are contaminated with bacteria and toxins that can make people sick. In addition to rescue costs and recovery costs, the cost of lawsuits is also beginning to mount. A group of first responders who were exposed to toxic smoke from the Arkema Chemical Plant fire in Crosby, Texas, that was caused by Hurricane Harvey flooding, are now suing the company, saying it should have disclosed the types of hazardous chemicals stored on site that ended up sending them to the hospital suffering from toxic fumes.
But of course, they had Texas's help in keeping that information secret, keeping that information from the public. And yes, apparently even from Texas's own first responders. Amazing.
Homeowners in Houston have filed suit against the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the state after the Corps intentionally released floodwaters from reservoirs that flooded and destroyed their homes. Meanwhile, a new analysis by Public Citizen found that some corporate news media outlets ignored the climate change context of these two record-breaking back-to-back storms. TV news networks ABC and NBC did not mention climate change in many hours of hurricane coverage.
Mention what?
Climate change.
Never heard of it.
Some did so minimally or gave platforms to non-scientist climate change deniers. And in case all of that isn't enough, the wildfire season in 2017 is shaping up to be the worst ever. Climate scientist Dr. Michael E. Mann of Penn State said in a recent broadcast interview that the public's understanding of the growing impacts of climate change is crucial.
The impacts of climate change are no longer subtle. We are seeing them play out in real time. When people understand how much damage climate change is doing now, that's a real threat to the forces of denial and delay. The forces of inaction and delay don't want us to be able to use a teaching moment like this.
As I said, what climate change? Never heard of it. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide, please, on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Science is real from the beginning.